I want to play a song. It's a song that we sing, so it should be a song that's familiar. But I wanted to sort of just create a moment for us to just have a time of meditation and really a time of reflection, a song that's taken out of the setting of Revelation. It's called the Revelation Song. And so you can sing with it if you want, or use this opportunity to just listen, to maybe pay attention to the text, and to imagine this scene that John writes about in the book of Revelation from I believe Revelation chapter 5, the Revelation Song.
Worthy is the Lamb who was slain. I sing praise to the King of Kings.
from the book of Revelation chapter 7, verse number 9. After this I looked, and there was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, from all tribes and people and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, robed in white, with palm branches in their hands. They cried out in a loud voice, saying, "Salvation belongs to our God who is seated on the throne and to the Lamb." And all the angels stood around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures, and they fell on their faces before the throne and worshiped God, singing, "Amen, blessings and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our God forever and ever. Amen." From the very beginning, God has imagined a world where men and women do life together. Humans were created out of a context of a relationship into a context of relationship for the purpose of relationship. And as if to say, I really mean this, God gives us a glimpse of life in the end. In the book of Revelation, John is given a vision of life when the new heaven and new earth arrives. And in the end, we see people together. And together people sing, and together people worship, and together people share their connection to the Lamb of God that was slain for all people. Revelation 7, 9 again. After this I looked, and there was a great multitude that no one could count. And say this with me, church. From every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages. I want you to zoom in on that phrase, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and language. Contrary to popular belief, when we get to heaven, there may be some other languages than English spoken. It's an informative statement and helps set the stage for the sermon today. For the past 6 weeks, we have explored the conundrum we found ourselves in with regards to relationship. When it comes to our relationship, we might say that it's complicated. Even so, God has called us to excel in our relationships with one another, whether it's in family relationships or friendships or relationships with our brothers and sisters in the church family, or whether we're talking about relationships with our schoolmates or coworkers or employers or employees. We have a high calling to get relationship right. Our relationships may have the power to influence the way people see God and church. This morning, I want to dive into a really, really difficult topic. This morning, I want to talk about race in a sermon entitled Ebony and Ivory. Let me start by making a confession. The sermon process for me is something that starts the minute I say the final blessing at the end of church. I usually start thinking about the next week, that very moment. And throughout the week, I'm thinking and I'm reading and I'm writing and I'm studying and I'm trying to gather together a way to say something that will be edifying, that will be encouraging, that will be a blessing. Today's sermon has just been a difficult one for me to craft, to construct. I've talked about race in the past. This is not a subject that's new to me or that I'm unfamiliar with. But for some reason, there has just been an uneasiness in dealing with this. Many reasons. Let me highlight some of those reasons that I just feel uneasy. Number one, just racial tensions in our society, our community, today is just at a really high level. This might be the result of the, you know, social media. We talked about that last week. Because we're able to put things on social media and news gets around so fast, it may be that has added or contributed to the heightened sensitivity and tension in areas of race. We've always had racial problems and racial issues, but for some reason, right now, it's just a really, really tense time. And the issues and conversations surrounding race are feverish, and at times the conversations are just unreasonable. They're unhelpful. They're unconstructive. Another reason why I just feel uneasy is based on this belief that I believe that the church ought to be a leader in discussions about race. But here recently, the church seems to be as divided on the issue as the general public. Now, given the text from Revelation that I read earlier, it seems imperative that the church find a God-driven way to address racial tensions. Here's another reason. I have two daughters, one adult, one who thinks she's an adult. She's on the verge of adulthood, and they're biracial. I'm a black man married to a white woman. It is an extremely important to me that I navigate issues about race in a careful and thoughtful way. I can only hope that my life, through speech and conduct, demonstrate a Jesus remedy to racial issues, and as they grow and start their own families, I want them to have a healthy view of race and the way we deal with it. And so I know that every word that I speak, I have to be particularly honed in and making sure that I'm saying the right things. And here's another reason that I'm uneasy. I'm a black minister serving in a predominantly white church. There is a present anxiety that I say the right things, not alienating black members or alienating white members. Furthermore, quite honestly, talking about race issues, particularly in 2021, is exhausting. I'm tired, church. I feel completely, at times, inadequate to offer anything of substance. Now, I hope and pray that that's not a troubling setup for the sermon, that you're now about to tune me out because I feel so uneasy. Perhaps I just express some of the feelings that you all feel about issues of race. Now, I tend to say something and maybe add something to the conversation. But I'm also realistic. I am not going to give you any like revolutionary, unheard word. I'm probably going to say things that you've already heard, that you already know. I am not Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. As profound and powerful as his work was, I want to remind you that I would guess that many in here admire the work of Martin Luther King and hold him up to be a hero or the standard when it comes to racial issues and civil rights. But let me remind you that while he was alive, the two most hated men in the world, number one was Khrushchev, the president of Russia, the Soviet Union. The second hated man in America was Dr. Martin Luther King. He said some things that ruffled some feathers. He said some things that was controversial at the time. Now, today we look back on that and it's all, I have a dream, and it's all great. But Martin Luther King had a lot to say about race. He had a lot to say about systematic racism. He had a lot to say about white supremacy. He had a lot to say about reparations. A lot of those words don't get played, But he had a lot to say, and he was hated. I often wonder if Martin Luther King was still alive today, would he be as loved and revered as he is being dead? It was Dr. Martin Luther King that said this. It is appalling, and this is a quote, it is appalling that the most segregated hour of Christian America is 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. Black and white folks have long retreated to their respective cultural homes when it comes to worship. Worshiping with our own folk has been a source of safety and comfort. The truth is that no matter how we try, living together with our differences is hard work. But it's not impossible. It's hard work. It might even be difficult. But it's not impossible. I don't believe in a God of impossible. I believe in a God of possible. Remember that sermon series I preach? Like, we can, because God is able. So it's hard work, but it's not impossible. But understand that if we don't get this right, it could have troubling consequences. How many of y'all have ever heard of a guy by the name of Mahatma Gandhi? Gandhi in India did a lot of work through peaceful protest for his people who were being being persecuted and oppressed for the mere fact that they were poor and didn't have the right culture. Did you know that Gandhi actually considered becoming a Christian? Gandhi had focused a lot of his studies on the Gospels. He read a lot of the Gospel material. He honored and really loved the message of Jesus. He believed that Jesus was the way to get his people out of the oppression that they were in. And so Gandhi actually went to church one day wanting to express to this church that he wanted to follow Jesus. And he went to the church one day. And do you know that the white church said, you need to go worship with your own people. So Gandhi walked away and said, they have caste system. That was what he was fighting, the caste system, you know, the high, lower, or middle and the lower. Did they have that in church? If they have that in Christianity, I might as well stay a Hindu. But do you see how Christians' understanding of race and culture impacted one of the greatest human beings on this planet? Gandhi could have been a Christian, but for Christians' understandings about race. Let me read something to you. Ephesians chapter 2, starting at verse number 11. Ephesians chapter 2, starting at verse number 11. So then, remember that at one time you Gentiles by birth called the uncircumcision by those who are called the circumcision, a physical circumcision made in the flesh by human hands. Remember that you were at that time without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace. In his flesh he has made both groups into one and has broken down the dividing wall, that is, the hostility between us. He has abolished the law with his commandments and ordinances, that he might create in himself one new humanity in place of the two, thus making peace, and might reconcile both groups to God in one body through the cross, thus putting to death the hostility through it. So he came and proclaimed peace to you who were far off and peace to those who were near. For through him, both of us have access in one spirit to the Father. So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are citizens with the saints and also members of the household of God, built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets with Christ Jesus as the cornerstone. In him, the whole structure is joined together and grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are built together spiritually into a dwelling place for God. The clash of cultures and races is as old as humanity. There has always been this hostility between people of different backgrounds and different nationalities. As much as we are the same, we are humans. We have the same organs. We have the same basic needs: food, water, shelter, the need to be loved and accepted. We're the same. But we also are different in many ways. And I want you to get this. If maybe this is the most profound thing I'll say today. We have some differences. And it's okay. It's okay. When I go to a restaurant, and I go to the restaurant, and maybe I'm having some fish or some chicken, and I'll ask for some hot sauce. Now, y'all need to get this. This is some important stuff here, right? Now, when I ask for hot sauce, this is what I want. I want Frank's hot sauce. Okay, that's hot sauce. But oftentimes in restaurants, I'll have owned by a white estate, white owner. That's fine. No. They'll bring me this. That's not hot sauce. That's Tabasco sauce. Now, I don't hate Tabasco sauce, but I asked for hot sauce. Now, those of you, some of you in the crowd, understand exactly what I'm talking about when I say I want some hot sauce. Go back to the other screen. And when you say you want some hot sauce, you want Frank's hot sauce, Louisiana style Cajun hot sauce, or maybe Texas Pete, but Frank's is like the golden standard. Again, nothing against, go to the next one, Tabasco sauce, but that ain't hot sauce. That's Tabasco sauce. It's just something that I grew up with. It's part of my culture. And if you dig really deep into African culture, you'll learn that hot sauce and that style of hot sauce is actually something that goes way back to the motherland, goes back to Africa, our desire and taste for hot sauce. Again, if you are a Tabasco sauce fan, okay, that's cool. It doesn't make you bad or different, but a brother like me, when I want some hot sauce, I want Frank's. It's just different. We just have some differences, and it's okay. Macaroni and cheese. In a lot of white families, macaroni and cheese is a main dish. In a black family, it's a side dish, and it looks a certain way. It looks brown and crunchy on top. This is how we do macaroni and cheese in the black family. It's just different. That doesn't make you bad if you like Kraft macaroni and cheese out of the box. I mean, you're definitely missing something if you not had like my macaroni and cheese. I'm just trying to tell you. I make the cheesiest macaroni and cheese. I put like 10 different cheeses in my anyway, you're getting hungry. It's almost lunchtime. It's just different. We do some things different. It doesn't mean that my preference is superior to your preference. It's just different. Doesn't mean that your preference is deficient or that I'm deficient. We're just different. We have some differences. We have some different cultural norms. We have some different rhythm tendencies. When a song comes on, it's likely that black folks will clap on 24. Y'all know what I mean? Black folk tend to clap on 2 and 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. White folk, I don't know why, but white folks tend to clap on 1 and 3. That's just what they do. Now, again, I like to say, friends don't let friends clap on 1 and 3. But guess what? It's okay. It's okay. We're just built differently. We have some different a lot of our rhythm comes from Africa, and 2 and 4 is the dominant beats. That's just who we are. That doesn't make us superior, and it doesn't make us deficient. Just different. And church, that's okay. It's okay that we have some differences. But when we begin to say that people are deficient or that somehow I'm superior because of the way I was raised or the minute I begin to say we're better than you or we're supreme, that's when the problems come in. And that's exactly what Paul points out in his letter to the Ephesians. That it ought not be that way. You see, through Christ, the wall of hostility, this idea that I'm better than you because of my cultural norms, or you're better than me, or you're worse than me because of your cultural norms, that has been torn down in Christ 2:14 of Ephesians 4, he is our peace. In his flesh he has made both groups into one and has broken down the dividing wall, that is, the hostility between us. Now, in discussions about race, I realize that everyone does not have a Christian worldview, and thus a Bible verse may not speak to everyone. But in church, this verse ought to be informative, instructive, and influential as we try to invoke a better way of living in a world full of racial strife and tension. But even as we strive to implement a God vision for humans in a church context and prayerfully in our communities at large, we still have to contend with life's reality. I can only speak from my experience and my sensitivities as a black male. I come from a black family. I grew up in a black neighborhood, and I have sensitivities to issues that affect the black community. Do you know that black mothers are more likely to receive late or no prenatal care while they are pregnant, and that the death rate of black women due to pregnancy complications is 3 times higher than that of white mothers? Do you know that black infants are more likely to, you know, if they have complications, they're more likely to die than white babies? But why is that? Do you know that black folks are sentenced to more time in prison for the same crimes committed by their white counterparts? Black folks are 6 times more likely than white folks to spend time in prison. My brother is a retired correctional officer at a New York State Correctional Services, and he worked in prison, in a female prison, and he would have females on his block, both charged, guilty, convicted of the same crimes, black and white, and more often than not, the black prisoner was sentenced to more time than the white prisoner. Why is that? Why do I highlight these statistics? Well, we're prompted to draw some analysis from these statistics. You know, why is the mortality rate higher for black mothers than white mothers? Are black mothers predisposed to some health frailties that white mothers are not? Is this a question of the quality of health care given to black mothers? Why are black men more likely to go to prison? Are we black men more violent? Are black men more defiant? We're forced to answer some of these questions. Now, as a black man, when I look at these statistics, I tend to say, something's not right there. I begin to then draw on my own experience. You know, I remember as a 21-year-old going to the hospital in Buffalo, New York. I injured my knee at work. I used to fix pallets. I used to repair pallets. And one day at the end of work, my knee was it was hurting so bad. It was so bad on my right knee that when I drove home, I had to use my left leg to drive home. I don't know if you've ever had to do that before, but it's quite uncomfortable and I don't recommend it. But I drove home and it was a pretty scary sight. And I got home, my mother said, "What's wrong with you?" I said, My knee, I don't know what happened. Did you hit it?" "No, I didn't hit it." So she said, "Well, let me take you to the ER." Go to the ER, and a doctor comes in. He said, "Hey, what's going on?" So, white doctor. And he said, what's going on?" I said, "Sir, I really can't explain it except to say that I was at work, and, you know, when I was leaving work, my knee just started." And he says, "Well, it doesn't look like anything's wrong." I said, "Okay, doesn't look like anything's wrong." And so then he begins to grab my leg, and I wish I could describe the way he grabbed my knee. It wasn't like a delicate, like it hurt. It was just, he just started grabbing it. And when he grabbed it the way he grabbed it, I winced really hard. "Ow!" He said, "Come on, guy, stop faking." I said, "I'm not faking. That was painful." He said, "Oh, I guess we'll go get an x-ray." I went and got an x-ray, and the x-rays came back negative. He said, "Oh, I guess you want some pain medication." I said, "Sir, you're the doctor. I fix pallets for a living. Whatever you say." I left that day hurt because the doctor seemed to suggest that I was trying to do workman's comp fraud or something, which I'm sure is a problem. Well, I reached out to a nurse who happened to go to our church, and I told her what happened. And she said, do you know that there are probably about 10 to 15 other complaints from African Americans about that same doctor who treated them the same way? Perhaps the mortality rate amongst black women isn't just a matter of black women being predisposed to some health issues. It may be that there is something in the system that's not working for black women. I don't know. But it would seem that we would pursue that so that the mortality rate would come down, and that we don't ignore that there may be a systemic racial component to it. We have to ask these questions, and I can only speak from my experience as a black male that, yeah, I'm sensitive to that. I'm sensitive to why a lot of black males end up in prison. I know a lot of white people who do a lot of bad stuff. I know that people will tell you that, well, you know, black-on-black crime is a really big issue. Yeah. Over 80% of crimes committed against black people are committed by black folks. 80%. Does anyone know the percentage of crimes against white folks committed by white folks? It's over 80%. It's the same. Why? Because crimes are usually committed in the neighborhoods where you live. If you live in a black neighborhood, it's likely that the crimes are going to be committed by a black person. If you live in a white neighborhood, it's likely that the crimes are going to be committed by a white person. Statistics can tell a story. It doesn't tell the whole story. But I would offer that there is something there that perhaps we need to talk about. I can only reflect on my own experience and my own sensitivities. For the past several years, I have had to confront my own fears and my own frustrations with race relations and real concerns about the plight of black folks all over the planet. I've tried to contend with these issues as a man of God, but I admit a lot of times the flesh takes over. I have experienced deep anger, deep frustration, a growing unease even to talk about the topic. I know that as we speak, there are terms and phrases that drive people crazy. Terms like white privilege, black power, white supremacy, black lives matter, critical race theory, systematic racism. My deep frustration usually stems from the fact that most people have very little clue to what these terms even mean. Critical race theory is like the new one. You hear it all over the news. And I am convinced that people who are against critical race theory and people who are for critical race theory have no clue what it means. Because I've heard people who are for it talk about it, and that's not what it is. And I've heard people who are against it talk about it, and that's not what it is. But you have school boards all over the country banning the teaching of critical race theory in schools. And then when they explain what's being taught as critical race theory, I'm saying that's not critical race theory. So most people argue and get all upset over stuff they don't even know what it means. We are not going to solve the issues of race in a sermon or by posting stupid memes on social media, on Facebook or Twitter. We're not going to solve issues of race by subscribing to racial tropes or stereotypes or even embracing the political conversations around race. It's just not going, it doesn't work, it hasn't worked. The real work of racial healing and reconciliation is in the hands of God's people who have been called to a deeper commitment on race relations. This work involves much more than retreating to our respective racial views that are usually populated by folks on opposite ends of the spectrum who have very little interest in engaging with people with whom they disagree. So as we consider how to redeem relationships in the midst of racial strife all over the world, it may be helpful to be reminded of some convenient truths. Number one, the experience many people on the issue of race is a painful one in need of our compassion, our empathy, and our love, not our dismissal. I've told you about traveling to South Africa back in 2017 and talking to Frank Bokassi, who was a bartender at the hotel where I was staying. And I remember him telling, I was a seminary student, that I was a minister. And he said, "You're a minister. I have to ask you a very important question. Why does God hate black people?" Huh? And he began to tell me of his experience in the Congo as a 10-year-old being taken from his village. And white Europeans coming in and saying, "Hey, we'll give you a shovel. We want you to dig down and get, there's some like precious jewels down there. You dig down there, we'll give you 10 bucks and you come up with the jewels and give them to us. You can take that 10 bucks and take it back to your community." And Frank told me of 10-year-old kids that he would go on digging expeditions with that were buried alive as they dug for these precious jewels that the Europeans would get and then go make millions and thousands and millions of dollars on. And he was able to take $10 back to his village. He says, "Why does God hate black people?" I can tell you stories of my dad, who grew up in South Carolina in the 20s and 30s. And his mother renting her children to white farmers for 10 cents a day. Because that was the only way that they could survive and make money. They couldn't own land. She rented her kids for 10 cents a day. I've told you and talked to many of you about my own experience of trying to research my family tree. And the fact is, you know, my father was born in 1924. His father was born in 1868, probably the son of a newly emancipated slave. And that's all I can get. I get my grandfather's birthday from his death certificate in 1926. But other than that, I can't go any further because his mother, his dad, they were slaves. I can't find the manifest. And I don't know if any of you know how it feels to try to study your family tree and you get stuck at your grandfather. I don't know who my great-grandparents were or who their parents were. I did some DNA testing and it came back that I'm, I've got some Nigerian roots and some Congo roots, but I don't know where to start. It's frustrating. Maybe there's this experience. When my oldest daughter was young, I remember she was playing a game with some kids and they were playing catch with the ball and they were playing keep away from my daughter and they wouldn't let her get the ball. And I remember her asking her friends, like, "Why won't they throw me the ball?" And one of her friends said, "Maybe it's because you're brown." I don't believe that the kid who said that meant any ill will. I think they were expressing something that maybe they were taught in school. I don't know if it was Black History Month or something. But do you know that for several years, my oldest daughter would not go outside because she knew that the sun would turn her skin darker. And she thought that people wouldn't like her if she had dark skin. We're not talking about 1800s or the 1960s. We're talking about the 2000s. So here's a convenient truth. Instead of dismissing people's experience with race, maybe we have some compassion and empathy, some understanding. And maybe we engage in more deep and real honest conversations rather than dismissal. Another convenient truth is that differences does not denote deficiency. We talked about that early on. My preference and my culture isn't superior to your culture and your upbringing. It's just different. And what we do with our differences, let's celebrate those things. Here's another convenient truth. The plight of humanity has always been better when we've done it together. I preach many times on Acts chapter 11 and verse verse 25 and 26, Acts chapter 11, verse 26 is where it says that the disciples were first called Christians. And when you read the background of that church in Antioch, that was a church that was a multicultural, multiracial church. There were Jews, there were non-Jews, there were people from all over the area. And it was a fascinating sight that these folks actually cohabitated together, because that was unusual, that people from different races and different cultures would get together. And the outside world said, what is going on there? Why? Jews aren't supposed to be with not. What's going on? And somebody said, oh, they're followers of Christ. They're followers of Christ. They're little Christians. That's all about. Christians was actually a derogatory term. But it made sense, because Jesus says, they will know you are my followers by your love for one another. We're just better when we do things together. In 1982, I don't know if Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney had Acts 11 in mind when they wrote their hit song, Ebony and Ivory. This song hit number one and held that position for like 7 weeks. And here are two of the most prolific singer-songwriters in history collaborating on a fairly simple song, not a lot of lyrics. Many called it a cliche. Paul McCartney's management team didn't want him to release. He said, this song is terrible. Don't release this song. Here are the lyrics. We all know that people are the same wherever you go. There is good and bad in everyone. We learn to live when we learn to give each other what we need to survive. Together alive. Ebony and ivory live together in perfect harmony, side by side on my piano keyboard. Oh Lord, why don't we? The song highlights the beauty of music, and specifically a piano. The rich melodies and harmonies that come from a piano is the result of white keys and black keys being played together. Now, you can play songs all on the white keys, and it will probably sound okay. You can play songs all on the black keys, and it will probably sound okay, but when you play them together, it's just better. Add that song to your playlist. And let it remind us that there is a beautiful composition to be made by God's people when we don't ignore our colors, but embrace them. Celebrate them. Work together on a new harmony of life. Let's stop saying we don't see color. We do. It's okay. But when we make judgments based on color, that's when we get it wrong. And like always, allow children to teach us how to live this harmony. Amazingly, but not surprisingly, children often get God's concept about relationship right. They do it better than adults. And adults, we often come in and we mess it up. Take a look and see what I mean.
We end the week with the story of two little girls. They are just 4 years old, but grown-ups could learn a lot from them. Here's Steve Hartman on the road.
Hey, red.
Miami preschoolers Gia Sarnicola and Zuri Copeland say they're not best friends.
I know.
They say they're closer than that. Closer than mere sisters even.
Because I don't know how to wash the paintbrush.
In fact, Gia and Zuri truly believe they're twins.
Oh, yeah.
Ashley and Valencia are their moms.
They will tell you that they are twins, and they have a long list of reasons why to back it up.
To them, what makes a twin?
Similarities.
Similarities.
Look, come here.
For example, the girls say they're both four, their birthdays are practically the same day, and of course the obvious physical similarities.
So what am I looking at here?
The same height.
Oh, because you're the same height.
Clearly twins, which is why they also insist on matching outfits whenever possible. So far, Ashley and Valencia have indulged them, but they also recognize there is some bitter to this sweet.
You know, you're happy for a few seconds, and then you become sad because they have to grow up, and then society takes over.
Indeed, society has already tried to take over.
Last month, Zuri and Gia were at a birthday party.
when an older kid told him they couldn't be twins because they don't have the same skin color. Gia broke down. But through her tears, she got out this rebuttal. She said, "You don't know what you're talking about. We're twins because we share the same soul."
I just get chill bumps.
Soul?
I was just like thrown by just that word.
Yeah.
Obviously, what Gia was trying to say is that at our core, we are one. And as we look back on this year, with all its division and racial strife, it's important to remember that while all this was going on, so was this.
We have a lot to learn,
right.
and we can learn from children.
In fact, the moms say they already have.
For sure.
Yeah.
We've never talked so much on the phone.
Yeah.
And that's what the twins want for all of us, to push back against the cynics.
Some girls said we're not twins. And we are twins.
And to stop it with this discrimination business once and for all.
It's gonna make her sad.
That way, they say, we can move on to the more important things in life.
You know what we're gonna get today?
What?
We're gonna get ice cream!
Steve Hartman.
And you don't.
Oh.
On the road, without ice cream, in Miami.
Hi, can you get another?
Like
that is
always,
the CBS Evening News.
Like always, children just have this capacity to figure things out that we often just don't get. Did you hear that parents' worst fear? You're going to grow up into adults and then the world's going to take over. There's something to be said about embracing this child attitude, this child heart. But we understand that, man, we have some differences, but like we're more alike than we are different. One blood, one soul, one spirit. Read Galatians chapter 3, 26 and following, where Paul says, we're not Jew or Greek anymore, like slave, we're one. He says the same thing to the church in Colossians. About 25 years ago, when I started attending Rochester College, our dorm parents, Frank and Terry Pitts, Terry passed away last year. But part of them being our dorm parents meant that we were their family, along with their family. They had three sons. Their youngest son, Mackenzie, probably at the time was, I don't know, 2 or 3 years old. And we'd, you know, be in the lobby and, you know, playing with the kids. And I remember one day, Mackenzie and I are wrestling. I wouldn't do that now because Mackenzie's like 300 pounds and he'd probably kick my butt. But back then, he was just this scrawny little white kid. And we were wrestling on the floor in the lobby. And there was this point where he's on top of me, you know, he's beating me up. And he just looks at me with the most serious look. And he said, "How did you get all that chocolate on your face?" I said, "Well, the same way you got all that vanilla on your face." And he said, "Oh, okay." And then we just started wrestling again. It was an honest observation that we looked different. But we didn't stop wrestling. I want you to know I kicked his butt after that too. One last story. I've been preaching for a long time. I'm passionate about this. When Christy and I lived in Flint, I worked at a church, Carpenter Road Church of Christ. It was a mixed church, 50% black, 50% white. And I remember after preaching a sermon, a guy, a black man, older black man, looked like he was in his 60s, close to his 70s. He came up to me and he shook my hand and he grabbed my hand really strong and he began to well up with tears. And he said, "I have never seen this before." You know, of course, I let that go to my head, said, "Man, I must have really preached a really good sermon that day. I really knocked it out the park. I brought this dude to tears." He said, "I have never in my lifetime seen white people worship with black people. This is the first time I've ever seen it." It was a moment of joy, but also a moment of sadness. That in this man's 60, 70 years, he had never gone to church and saw black people and white people worship together. What I believe deeply is that there are more people who want to see us do things together than do things apart. But doing things together will be difficult. We have different preferences, we have different styles, we have different stories. We do have different political persuasions. But I want you to know this, not all black people are liberals, not all white people are conservatives, and vice versa. Again, once we start getting politics into the conversation, it just really gets messed up. It's going to take some honesty. It's going to take some interacting with one another and hearing experiences and not dismissing them. But even after we hear them and we talk about them and we explore, we have to forge forward toward a new way, a God-envisioned way, a way that mimics that text in Revelation, where all the tribes and all the tongues, all the colors of people are surrounding the throne and worshiping God. So many people can't wait to get to heaven to experience that. They want to experience that here and now. Well, in order for them to experience that, it's on us, church. It's on us to get that relationship right. It's on us to create that harmony, ebony, ivory, whatever colors in between. So as we sing this next song, another song from Revelation, a song where we're given a call to lay our crowns down. A crown could be whatever is important. If your racial identity is your most important feature, you need to lay that crown down. And we need to come together. We need to worship this King. And we need to give a view and a glimpse of the world that, yes, it's difficult. It's not impossible. We can do this in perfect harmony. If we can be in prayer for you during this time, and I pray that I've given you something to think about and reflect on, come as we stand and we sing together.